everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing new ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And a lot of the stuff that I get is ideas. One would wonder, how does a man for 15 years do a radio show and come up with different ideas every day? What do we do? What shall the program be? Well, part of the programming comes from what I see in science. I get sent a lot of stuff, articles and research that comes in my direction. A most interesting one appeared today, and I thought this is certainly worthy of programming. Today I want to talk about hysteria. Yes, the very word hysteria. Hysteria, it's a 4,000-year-old diagnosis that's been applied to witches, saints, and things like that. Over the last 50 years, the word has been spoken less and less, and this is for a good reason. It's because it relates to women, H-Y-S, beginning. Some people have seen it as a misogynistic or woman-hating phrase. To say that hysteria, which generally means being out of control in most people's acceptance of the word, the way most people see it, being out of control, screaming, being emotional, to call somebody hysterical is in a way to say that it is women that get that way and not men. So rightfully so, the word hysteria has been challenged. It's been known by many physicians as the diagnosis that dare not speak its name. You know, that you better not say the word. However, if we could take aside, move away from the load of that diagnosis and try to understand the two categories that it kind of gave birth to, the two understandings that it gave us, we can learn a great deal. So because they didn't like the word hysterical, they changed the word to histrionic with an H-I-S-T-R-I-O-N-I-C. Histrionic meaning a certain personality disorder. And then the other thing that happened was the original meaning of the word histrionic had to do with a kind of a physical condition. And that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about it today because although at times we thought this was a purely psychological condition, the evidence today appearing in the New York Times, an article by Erica Kinnitz, said that the American psychiatric disorder has finally given recognition to the fact that a lot of the brain imaging studies have resulted in seeing that there is a condition in the brain, one that you can actually see by doing brain imaging, that leads to both of these disorders. In other words, if somebody is histrionic, if somebody isn't, I'm going to describe what that is, or if somebody has what the original meaning of the word hysterical was the conversion syndrome. In fact, you know, it was a conversion syndrome is the way that psychiatry got uncovered. It was somebody who had a condition that was an illness that couldn't be cured, and she went to a doctor, a neurologist, and the neurologist said, there's no neurological basis for this illness. And then he started talking to the woman, and she said that she had certain problems in her marriage. And as he began talking to her about it, she uncovered that she had certain sexual conflicts. And once she spoke about these sexual conflicts, the disorder that she had, which I think was a form of paralysis, disappeared. The guy was a guy named Breuer. Breuer was the precedent to Freud. So it was like they discovered a thing called the talking cure. Hey, wait a minute. Here's a person with a physical ailment, and if you talk to them, they're going to get better. So then they started to consider how many things, and of course Freud's theory was that it was the result of sexual frustration, that many disorders existed. not only physical but psychological. And of course, that again, you know, from Freud's point of view, he really didn't show the respect for women. He saw it as, you know, they're more frail than men and so on and so forth, even though the culture had led everybody to it. So I could understand everybody's objection to it. But let's take a look at this syndrome, because I've certainly, as a professional in the field, have seen it more than once. I saw a blind man see again. I've seen somebody who had a paralysis of one hand be able to move their hand again just through one therapeutic session. Just once. I've seen this a number of times to know that it does exist. The problem with this and the understanding that there are certain physical disorders that could be converted into, conversion syndrome is what it's called, converted into, that certain psychological problems can be converted into a physiological reaction, is it's easy for, therefore, physicians who can't discover the reason for a problem to sometimes blame it on emotionality. Then they say, it's just in their mind. So the problem with it is that it's true that it does happen, but it's also used by powerless people who are inadequate to kind of excuse their inability to discover a truth. So I want to look at the part of it that's true. The part of it that's true, according to in a 1997 paper published in the Journal of Cognition, Dr. Halligan and John Marshall analyzed the brain function of a woman who was paralyzed on the left side of her body. First, they spent large amounts of money on tests to ensure that she had no identifiable organic lesions. When the woman tried to move her paralyzed leg, her primary motor cortex was not activated as it should have been. Instead, her right orbital frontal and right anterior cingulate cortex, parts of the brain that have been associated with action and emotion, were activated. So they tried to move her leg, and her emotional side of her brain got activated, and this they saw in brain studies. The patient willed her leg to be paralyzed. The association was with the emotional side and the leg. And this is just as true in men as it is with women. Many men with physical symptoms or have physical symptoms that are being controlled by their emotional selves. Let me just give you an example of this. We had I studied with a man named Peter Hogan, and he used to say the following. He said, when a person has a strain in the back of their neck, he said, that's significant. He said, when they have one in their stomach or their back, he said, that's also significant. He said, and here's the significance. He said, if people have constant stomach disorders, then it has to do with the earliest stage of life. When they were suckling, when they were sucking on their mother's breast and they were taking in nutrition, and it was the way they were taking in the nutrition, if it was toxic, if the mother's milk was in some way carried with it the tension that the mother may have felt, then that person will have stomach disorders. He had another interesting theory. And so when he went to work, when he worked with people, he was a psychiatrist, when people came to him with stomach disorders and they wanted to find a psychological reason, he always went into an examination of their very early infancy and what the situation was like with mom. And sure as all hell, more often than not, the stomach disorders got better because he examined it. He had another one with the back of the neck. How many of you have tension in the back of your neck where you feel the back of your neck is just aching all the time? He said that has to do with the first stage of life when an infant has to raise its head. Is its head being adequately supported by the parents until its neck muscles are ready enough to raise its head? Or is that child forced to raise their head on their own, which they often do? He says people with back of the neck tension very often are people who are under the strain of having to take care of everything themselves. Really interesting. Lower back syndrome, you carry the weight of the world on your shoulders. And he had this model. He was a Reichian therapist, following the world of the work of Wilhelm Reich, who studied the musculature of the body. And in his work, it was just remarkable to watch how he would effect these cures with people who had different physical syndromes. And we see it, too, here at the clinic that we work at when people come in. You know, very often we'll see something like people who are afraid to get angry. And it converts into different syndromes, that, you know, as well as depression, but into different physical syndromes. So this is really a fascinating field to study. And as we're saying now, whereas we used to think it was true, we used to observe it's true, now through brain imaging, we're able to find out that the physical ailment is tied to the emotional part of the brain, and we can approach it that way a lot more accurately. You can actually do therapy with people and actually have their brain mapped while you're doing it. You can see what part you're activating. I mean, imagine if you said to somebody, I want you to try to move your left leg, and the person had a paralysis, and you saw the right side of their brain, you saw the part of the brain that relates to emotions activated instead of the motor cortex. You'd know exactly where it's coming from. So, I mean, this is really rich material. It's in the New York Times today, my friends. It's exciting stuff. It leads me on to try to talk to you a little more about how this happens. And how, of course, there's a great caution that it shouldn't be overused, and we call it conversion syndrome, but the original discovery of it was called hysteria because they thought it was a woman's illness. That's what they thought. They didn't know men have this too. Men suffer terribly from tension. From converting their suppressed emotions and their kept inside to medical ailments. I mean, why is it that men die so much sooner than women? So we know that it's true. We know it's not that. But let's take a little further look at it. The medical definition of hysteria, and this is an old one from the Ellen White research paper, was a neurotic disorder characterized by a wide variety of somatic and mental symptoms occurring from a form of dissociation. Now, let me teach you about dissociation. This is Armand DeMille, in case you just tuned in. You're stepping into the classroom on WBAI, a classroom in psychology that we give here. And we give it with you in mind so that you could learn dissociation is a big deal. Dissociation, not disassociation, but dissociation, one word, happens to people. When things are so bad that you want to leave someplace with your mind, if you're being tortured as a child, what do? You dissociate. You take your mind, you put it elsewhere. Many of you who are listening to this program know of times that you spaced out. You left with your mind and you came back a few minutes later and you have no idea where you went. That's called dissociation. One of the things about this histrionic disorder is that there is this tendency to dissociate. There's this tendency when things get really bad, you leave in some way. Now, if you think about it associated to the physical disorders, just think about what you're doing. If you have some problem with aggression, very often your arms may get paralyzed. Because then you can't raise your arms. In a way, you've dissociated from your power. You've kind of pushed your power away because now you're too weak to fight back. I've known people who are dependent people, who are afraid of leaving home, who got paralyzed in the legs. You know? All right, now I want to talk about the emotional one. So, because we understand that to call it hysteria is to link it with a female disorder, we wanted to change that, and what the American Psychiatric Association tried to do is to change the word to histrionic, H-I-S-T-R, okay? And it's very specific what this is, and tell me if you know people like this. A person is a histrionic person when they are, number one, it's a pervasive pattern of excessive emotionality, which is based on an attention-seeking methodology. Think of this. A person who is highly emotional, who is seems to be seeking attention. Now, when we think of hysterical people, we think of just that. Here's a person in the middle of the streets of New York screaming at the top of their lungs, and they are attracting a lot of attention. So the question we have is, wait a minute, are they so whacked out that they're out of control and we're just noticing they're out of control, or are they so whacked out in such a way that they are trying to get attention? According to psychiatry, the understanding of the histrionic personality is the person is doing an attention-getting device. So, I mean, haven't you ever felt it in life? Sometimes you get so frustrated you feel like screaming, and maybe if you scream loud enough, somebody will come to your help. Somebody will come to your and give you the aid that you need. You know, maybe they'll care for you. That's what people do. People with histrionic personality disorders. The other thing is they tend to be inappropriately seductive or provocative. Now, this, of course, sounds like women when you say seductive, but men are extremely seductive. Men just as well. So they could be, so you have these two things going on, and they could be going on simultaneously. Uncomfortable in situations, they're uncomfortable in situations where they are not the center of attention, and they tend to be very seductive, you know, or provocative. You know, trying to get your attention. And then the other thing is you see a rapidly shifting expression of emotions. It moves. At one minute they're laughing, another minute they're crying. They consistently uses physical appearance to draw attention to self. Usually the clothing they wear is like almost like, you know, saying, look at me. They have a style of speech that's excessively impressionistic and lacking in detail. So these are people who use words like fantastic, unbelievable, you know, really, really excessive words, but they don't have the details in the middle. They just have big, big words. They show self-dramatization. There's a lot of drama in the life, exaggerated expression of emotion. Now, here's the other side of it. This is a person who, as dynamic as they seem, because they're like a tornado in the world, you know, they're like a force of nature, they are very suggestible. Very, very, very suggestible. If you're a salesperson and you spot somebody and you understand histrionic personality, you know you could sell that person something because they're very suggestible. They're easily influenced by others or by circumstances. So they're easily influenced. It means they're easy to hypnotize in any way possible. And sometimes you hypnotize them with music or by talking to them. Or they're just, these are people who are very, very easily controlled by somebody who understands what they're controlling. Now you look at them and they look like they're out of control, but they're very easy to control because they're so suggestible. So if you go over to somebody like this who seems out of control and you say to them, hey, You look like a movie star. You know, and all of a sudden they change because they're being recognized. You know, have you acted? You look like somebody, but you know, I think you would be great in a role, and you just keep talking to them that way, they'll just eat out of your hands. Which is part of the reason that they are so frail and they get so easily manipulated themselves. So therefore they live a life where people are trying to use them because they're so fragile. They consider relationships to be much more intimate than they actually are. This is the kind of person who falls in love at first sight, you know? I met a guy last night at the bar. It was terrific. It was fantastic. He's the one I've been waiting for. I met this woman and she was just incredibly wonderful. Now, this kind of histrionic personality also has very strong opinions. But, you know, there's something missing in all their opinions. You know, they're very opinionated. They'll get up on them, and they'll be screaming their opinions easily. But they always miss the details. If you ask them, you know, on what do you base this argument? You know, well, you know, war is no good and you can't. And they just make these blanket statements. But they don't have the detail to back it up because they don't have their mind to kind of carry that detail along. So what good does it do us to understand this? Well, number one, it's important to understand that somebody who has this histrionic personality disorder is likewise able to have this conversion syndrome, which means they're going to have physical disorders somewhere later on that are going to be, they're not imagined, but they are part of the imagination. It's a conversion of an emotional conflict into a physical disorder. So you could see so many things go wrong with you, and many of you listening have things wrong with you that you can never understand. You know, and perhaps there's a psychological motivation behind it or something behind it worth looking at. Now, we take hysteria and we go to a thing called mass hysteria. Then we're going to be taking your calls all day today, by the way. For the rest of the hour, we'll be taking your calls. If you don't want to believe in hysteria, think of mass hysteria. Mass hysteria is the way our current government is running our population. If you get in Salem, Massachusetts, in 1692, the witch hunts were sparked by the accusation of these four young girls in a Puritan community, which was already fearful of eternal damnation. You know, they already had this working in the religion. But then when somebody suggested that the girls were somehow being demonic, you know, they went on this witch hunt, and remember, they hanged 19 people. One was pressed to death under stones. Others died in prison. Some were burned at the stake. I mean, what went on there? Well, you know, part of what they discovered about it, believe it or not, is that they found a high incidence of a fungus that grew from the rye seed. That they had rice stored up in place, and it had a certain thing, and this thing made people crazy. It was part of what was happening there at the time. But what happened? Why did the people go crazy in this particular way? Why did they become paranoid, accusatory? Well, if you frighten people enough, if you make them scared, you can engender a mass hysteria. What is mass hysteria? Mass hysteria is turning people against each other, having them join and finding a fearful enemy, and the enemy would be, you know, whoever the enemy is, and get them to agree with you or not oppose you in anything you do that you feel like doing. If you're a government and you want to scare your people, you want to get up and say Zig Heil, and you say the Jews are all bad, if that's what you feel like saying, and they are going to destroy you, you create a mass hysteria where no matter what you want to do, and this is exactly what Hitler did with Germany, you march those people, those fragile people, into believing this. And you created this kind of mass hysteria against Jews. And against everybody else, against homosexuals, against gypsies, against a whole bunch of other people. You said we have to keep our race clean. That's mass hysteria. And speaking of racial cleansing, Ku Klux Klan, that's mass hysteria. See, the whole idea, even some spiritual places, even some churches, work on a kind of mass hysteria. Kind of get people, you know, all revved up to be in one condition and to be against something else. So then someone comes along and you get frightened. Remember, you have to start off with the people who don't feel very secure, because that's the only people you could really move around that much. So you get people who feel insecure, just as we did when 9/11 hit, and you create a mass hysteria. You talk about the things that are going to come in and the bombs that are going to come in and that they have weapons of mass destruction and that people are kind of creeping up on you any minute now and you better put duct tape on your windows and all that other stuff, and you just keep people frightened and frightened and frightened and work at keeping them frightened and use all your media at frightening all the people so all the people are scared, so that when you say, I'm going into Iraq, they don't oppose you. Oh, God, sure. You're going to kill the devil. Sure. Mass hysteria is a form of mass hypnosis, which capitalizes on the fragility of the people, the frightened people. And when that happens, that's exactly how you get manipulated by the government. That's exactly how we got exactly where we are right now. So it's important for us to understand this sociologic, sociogenic illness, you know, mass hysteria. It's a kind of a way of containing fear and using it for your own benefit. Just as when you get the histrionic person, if you're a salesperson, you contain their fear and you use it for your own benefit. And when you're by yourself, what you do when you have this kind of tendency is you contain your fear and you translate it into some organ of your body not functioning properly. That's what it's about, my friends. And I'm sure you're going to have some reaction to this. So here I am, Armand DeMille. I'm responding to in agreement with the whole misuse of the word. I think it should never have been called hysteria in the first place. You know, it should have been called madness. That's good enough for me. And but I'm thinking that we're just discovering and just learning that we can map out the brains and prove, and not only prove, but help cure the people who are so afflicted, especially physiologically, by this stuff. So we're going to take a very... Let me wonder now. I wonder how this is working, Tony. Yeah, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I'm going to play you a little special music, and... then we'll continue with our programming. Here's a little something calming. Exactly 1:30 here at WBAI. Hey, you know, innocence is such a thing. I was listening to something I wanted to share with you as well today. This comes back from the 20s. Imagine, you know, not histrionic, just open-hearted. Here's something to bring you back from the past. And then we'll come back to your telephone calls. 212-209-2900. We'll be taking your calls in a few minutes.
I'm not one of the greedy kind. All of my wants are simple. I know what's on my mind. I'm not resting until I find what would make your eyes glisten with joy. Now listen, big boy, I wanna be loved by you, just you, nobody else but you. I wanna be loved by you, alone, boo-boo-ba-doo. I wanna be kissed by you, just you, nobody else but you. I wanna be kissed by you alone, Papa. I couldn't aspire to anything higher than feel the desire to make you my own, Papa. Buddy, love, buddy. I wanna be loved by you, just you, nobody else but you. I want to be loved for you, love.
You look it up. You can get it from Amazon. All of our music, by the way, in case you don't know it, is available to you, identification of which is available to you by going to the website, thepositivemind.com, pressing on the radio program. And when you can press on the radio program, it'll talk about archives. At the bottom of each archive, we have a description of the radio program, and we have the music that we played. Somebody out there is going to do me a favor, and they're going to pull together all of the music that we ever played and give me a list of it, and we'll see if we can make one great giant CD. We're going to take your calls at 212-209-2900. I also want to mention that our friends at the National Emphysema and COPD Association, you all remember we had Dr. Neil Schachter on the air with us. They doing some really good work with people, especially people recovering from 9/11 down there. From on September 28th on Thursday, it's free at Mount Sinai for anybody who's got a breathing disorder, any kind of breathing disorder. You're worried about it. You don't have the money. You don't want to pay for a doctor. You don't want to check it out. You're afraid of it. Do you smoke cigarettes? Whatever it is. You can go. They're going to be talking about pulmonary stuff at, it's going to be on Madison Avenue and 100th Street, but here's the phone number I'm going to give you, and you can call my office if you don't write it down, if you don't get it. It's 212-988-4436. It's about, tell them it's about Thursday that you want to check on. You heard about it on WBAI. They're doing a thing called the Pulmonary Protection Diet. This is for people who have got challenged lungs. Let's say not a hysterical syndrome, not a conversion syndrome, or maybe it is, but if your lungs are challenged, if you're an ex-smoker, a smoker, if you're somebody who gets asthma a lot, you know, you get an hour and a half of education there, no charge, and they don't suck you into anything. They're not trying to sell you anything. It's just they're good if their job is to give out information. And you're going to meet some people there that are very impressive. Telephone number again is 212-988-4436. It is a public service. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. 212-209-2900. We're going to take one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello, Armand.
Yes.
Listen, I was wondering if you could respond to the hysteria, or histrionics, let's say, in your own profession in relation to the repressed memory. I heard that like 35% of the psychiatric community believed in that whole syndrome or whatever it was that was going on 15, 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Which one?
You know, where people would go into therapy and they'd find out,
the uncovered memories, yeah.
Yeah.
The uncovered.
I mean, it was a pretty widespread belief in that.
It wasn't among the psychiatric profession. It was among the neo-psychiatric profession. It was at a time, you know, what happens with all of these things is it becomes a craze. Everybody thinks they invent the wheel, you know, and they come along and they say, they come up with a new title and they say, this title is the answer to everything. And for a small period of time there, people thought that they had the ability to uncover memories through a process, a number of processes, and they took the histrionic people specifically, the very suggestible people. Now, in some cases, the memories were accurate, but the people who believed in it, the people who, as therapists, did this for a living, uncovered memories in anybody who came to them. It's just like if you're a surgeon, you know, and somebody goes to you and they say, do I need surgery? You say, of course you need surgery. Well, these people would uncover these memories in just about everybody, and these were not real professionals. Usually they were non-licensed people who were trained in a certain program, and they decided that they were going to just do this with everybody, and they believed it. I mean, they believed it. They would kind of lead people into it. But it was kind of like a witch hunt, you know?
You're saying that the statistics that 30-35% of the psychiatric community believed.
Oh, no, they didn't. No, they
You're saying that statistic is off base.
No, that's wherever that statistic came from, it's none that I know of. Because it isn't that we didn't believe it. What we believed was, yes, it is possible, but how are we going to prove the cause? And in some cases, you could tell when somebody regresses. You could tell when there's validity to it, but the way that it was being applied was without even an aggression. You just tell people, I want you to look and see your father abusing you right now. If people are suggestible, they'll see it. So no, I don't think it was 30% of the profession believed this. No, most of the people I knew were sitting by saying, well, you know, it's just another craze coming by. It's just another wave. Like right now, there's a couple of new ones. They have EMDR. If you study somebody's eyes, you're going to see that you could do a thing. Now there's another one called tapping, where you tap somebody and you get another thing. It's everybody thinks they're inventing a cure, you know? And so I remember this craze, and I remember it as being particularly harmful to a number of people who had uncovered false memories, but they were the same people we're talking about. The most damaged people are the people who tend to be the histrionic people because they're so suggestible. Were you damaged by it in any way?
Me personally?
Yeah, did it come to you?
No, a friend of mine practiced psychology, and yeah, he ended up losing a license because some one of these patients ended up taking him to court and this and that and the other thing. And
what do you think? Do you think it was justifiable or not? Do you think he was wrong in the way he practiced?
I love the guy, and I think he's a terrific guy. And,
so he was of good intention.
And I think he maybe was a little off base in this particular area.
Well, let me ask you a question about him, just since it's somebody who you knew and you loved. What was his relationship with his father like?
There was a divorce at some point,
In his parenthood?
When he was like, 10, 12, something like that.
So you see, that's
I don't know about the relationship.
Yeah, and that's what kind of happens. What happens is very often the person who's selling the item is making up for some damage in their own past. So anyway, I want to thank you for bringing it up, and it does lead us right to some of the way it has been treated over the years. What's your name? Hello? Oop, I think we lost you. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hi, you're on the air. Turn down your radio, please.
Yes, are you talking to me?
Yes, I'm talking to you. Can you turn off your radio?
Okay. I'm a little bit nervous.
I'll slow down for you. What's your name?
Well, just call me Mother.
No, well, I won't call you Mother.
Okay, well, just call me M.
M is good. Hello,
yes,
M.
Yes, I'm not referring that I want to be your mother, but I have really been very patient for a lot of years because of someone in my family who... sort of like a family secret, but I think they're suffering from this thing that you're talking about today.
Mm-hmm.
And I am calling because I would like to ask you if there's some place where I could do some research myself in order to learn more about this so that I can ask you intelligent questions, and then I would ask you if I could possibly write you or contact you, because just recently I wrote a letter to the person. I said to them that I would like to help them, and for me to get to this point has taken a lot. I've had to go through so much understanding about what love is in order to get to this point. So I'm not just going to throw it out there because it took me a lot of years. It took me a lot of absence of my own social life in order to get to this point. So I would like to do some research, and I would like to, you know, do what I have to do to help this person. So I was wondering...
Well, could you be a little more specific? What did this person... Is this person somebody with a physical disorder or somebody who was very abusive to you when you were young?
Well, this person is a person who is abusive now, not only to me, but other people.
And is it your mother, your father, your... Somebody in your family?
You mean who this person is?
Yeah.
Well, it's a sibling.
So you have a brother or a sister who you care about, who you think is just out of their minds in a way. They're besides themselves. And that in their way that they are, they're probably doing damage to your nieces or your nephews, and you would like them not to do that anymore, and you would like to find a way to understand them better so that you could approach them in a way that maybe makes them receptive to you. Is that what you're saying?
Well, you could put it that way if you want to narrow it down, because I think that since I've known the person for over 50 years, I'm really the only person who have endured them. Because
well, let me ask you something. Why are you so evasive about saying it's my brother, my sister?
You mean what it is that they're doing?
No, my brother, my sister. You know, why do you not say those words?
Because
are you afraid that they may identify you?
Well, you know, you have just touched a tip of the iceberg about people like that on the air.
Sure.
I mean, there's a whole lot of problems there.
You think they may create damage for you if they
know
you're
saying? They have already done that. And
yeah,
they have, I have to, you know, I have to just say, I just explained to you when I said that it has been a lot of years of finding out what it is. So I can't really just tell you on the air like that.
No, but I thought what you would be able to say is more clearly.
No. Well, the only thing I can say is that you mentioned hysteria, right?
Right.
And okay, as a child, this person...
Do you have a computer, by the way?
Well, you're asking me two things at once.
I'm going to just ask you this because I want to get on to my callers.
Okay.
And I want to say to you...
But you're asking
me yes.
to explain something, and then you ask me if I have a computer. Yes, I have a computer. Do you have
okay.
some place for me to go?
Yes, I was going to say to you, look up both the words histrionic, H-I-S-T-R-I-O-N-I-C.
Yes.
And look up the word hysteria both.
Yes.
Okay, both of those will give you, lead you in directions where you could learn.
Okay,
and then feel free to be in touch with me
in any
way
number?
That I could help. You could reach me by email, armand@brainlink, brainlink.com.
Okay. And then speaking with you directly, I think I could feel more freer to talk about this.
Okay, fine.
Thank
however
you very
I
much.
Help. Sure.
God bless you, and I hope you go far with this, because there's a lot of people out there that's like that. When you mention the government and the country hysteria, you hit it right on the nail. But only I've been observing this and had to be quiet for over 50 years because I didn't think anybody else understood. But you've hit something, so I'll be in touch with you. God bless you.
Bye-bye for now. Mother. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Armand, this is Jesse from New Jersey. How
hello,
you doing?
Jesse.
I love you. I love everybody at BAI. You really did hit the nail on the head today with this mass hysteria. My family and God knows everybody else's family, many, many people, are affected by this mass hysteria that's going on right now. A lot of people that, you know, more peaceful and more enlightened individuals really want to actually reach out and help. And what I want to ask is, what can we do for individuals who are caught up in this fear-based, you know, propaganda, you know, to this mass hysteria, as you describe it?
Well, there's a few things you could do, you know. And one of the things you could do is, of course, you're not going to be a part of it, right?
Mm, absolutely.
So since you're not a part of it and you see it, instead of trying to explain to a frightened person that they shouldn't be frightened,
right.
What you really need to do is to be calm in their presence.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes what people do is they try to react and they try to tell people, no, you don't be frightened, don't be this, don't be that.
Yeah, they're very combative.
let them see, instead of you being combative with them, show them your calm face. Tell them you understand their fear. And if it's okay with them, touch them. Make a physical contact. Put your hand on their arm. You know, say, gee, I realize how frightened you are. And then don't say but. Just say, I realize how frightened you are, and I want you to know I'm here for you. And you watch. It takes away the power of the hypnosis.
Wow.
It takes the power of that mass hypnosis out of their brain because they have somebody in contact with them who actually loves them.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to just somebody who's trying to save them from their fears.
That's wonderful.
Sure. So make contact, you know, Jesse, and make contact with a calm voice where it's permissible, you know, as long as a person doesn't consider it an invasion.
Absolutely, because they always fight, you know, they're in a combative mode because they're in a fear-based rather than a love-based mode, you know,
that's
in their
right.
life.
And, that's right.
And you that's, know, anyone, yeah.
That's been propagated by the society, by everything mm-hmm. around, you know, everything you hear. I mean, there couldn't be a news broadcast that didn't have a fear basis to its motivation, the reason that people listen
threw
to me, news.
Threw away my TV 5 years ago.
Well, it's
so
a pity because nowadays there are so many good things being put on there if you search right. It's not that TV is all bad. There's a lot of good stuff in there. You just got to filter through it, you know, to find
Absolutely.
It. All right. Thanks, Jesse. Thanks
Love
for calling
you.
In.
Thanks a lot.
212-209-2900. I want to thank Tony, who's engineering today, for his masterful job, especially with the callers, Tony. Thank you so much. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Armand.
Hello.
Well, I guess this is more of a comment or question or so, could be.
I'll take both.
Okay.
What's your name?
My name is Kathy. And in terms of hysteria, of the lineage of the word, and in reference to psychology, part of my understanding is that it comes is applied to a woman is also like hysterectomy.
Yes, there was a similar root. In fact, I think Freud thought of it as an open womb.
Really?
A floating womb is what he said. He said, you know, he sees the condition as a floating womb. So, yes, and there was that same reference. In fact, you know, it's an interesting thing with the word H-Y-S.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at that as the beginning of a word, there's only like three words in the whole dictionary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's histrionic, and there's hysteria, and there's, hysteria, is hysterectomy, and hysterical, and that's all there is. It's funny. It's like, you know, what about histrophilia, which is the love of women? Why don't we have that? You know, why isn't that there? Histrophobia, which is a fear of women, that should be there as well.
Well, I thought also that it became popular, maybe a fad, a certain period where they would give women a hysterectomy to correct their whatever emotional, psychological problem.
Yep, absolutely.
And of course, I suppose in some ways it changed things, especially since when we have a hysterectomy, that removes a lot of organs that give off hormones, and it changes that.
Sure. There was a man, this is a story related, I mean, what you're talking about is truly tragic.
Yeah.
That the number of hysterectomies that were done in an effort to control a normal amount of emotional mood, or even an emotionally, hormonally based emotional mood, was tragic. Absolutely. And it was part of that male-dominated medical society who used to look this way. And I really think what they were showing was their own hatred and fear of women.
Mm.
You know? And I'm so glad that, you know, the organization worked in such a way that now that's happened so little in this society.
Yeah. Me too.
You too. Well, Kathy, I thank you for calling.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Sure. You know, there was a story about a man who had who was a very acting out crazy guy, and he had this is way back in 1920 or something, and they gave him, he was the first man to get a prefrontal lobotomy. And what that is they scrape a part of your brain out, and you know, they put a scalpel up your nose, and they scrape out a part of your brain. I'm sorry for these graphic images. and they thought by removing part of the brain, the man would be better behaved. Well, he was better behaved, truly, and they had this big convention, and they had this big group, and they sat him, they brought him in a suit and tie, and they sat him in front of this big convention of psychiatrically oriented people who were studying this man in the 20s, and they said, okay, Mr. Smith, I don't think that was his name, how come, you know, back there 10 years ago or 5 years ago, you were screaming and yelling and beating up people and throwing things on walls? He says, how come you're now, you're so peaceful and quiet? And he said, I learned to keep my mouth shut. He says, because if I don't keep my mouth shut, they take a needle and they put it up my nose and they scrape at my brains. So I just decided to get quiet. And you could see that, you know, all of this effort to try to base the belief that you're curing somebody this way is really just scaring people into compliance. 212-209-2900, this is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Good. Who is this?
This is Danny from Jersey.
Hello, Danny.
Hi, how are you? I have kind of a question because I don't feel that I fall necessarily into this category, but my friends tend to call me a crash and burn because I tend to go up like bullets.
You know, Danny, our cell phone reception is so poor, and I think you're saying you're a crash and burn kind of guy. Well, I tell you what, I'm going to disconnect and I'm going to have to just try to relate to that, you know, in some way. There are some people who tend to do this. There are some people who tend to ride the highs and ride the lows. And they go all the way up and they go all the way down, and they go the full scope of the emotional world. That isn't necessarily histrionic. That isn't necessarily somebody who is out of control. That's somebody who just likes to ride the peaks and the valleys. The condition where it's really excessive is when it stops you from having relationships with other people, satisfactory relationships with other people, and a successful kind of career, employment, job earning, you know, making money. If you can't support yourself because of your behaviors and you can't have decent relationships, then we would consider it a disorder. Okay? And I'm sorry, we have no more time. We're going to have to be going, so I'll be back with you tomorrow. And a reminder, the telephone number for the Mount Sinai and the lung thing, which will be on Thursday from 1:30 to 3 o'clock during our radio program. But go. It's a good thing. If you have any questions about your lungs, it's a very good place to find out. Is 212-988-4436. And you can look at thepositivemind.com to check out today's program. Here's a little seasonal music.
Do 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 do.